This edition of 411 Teen is dedicated to Brother Roderick Moore, a unique and passionate teacher who made a difference at Sale High School for 31 years. Brother Rod honored 411 Teen with his presence on several occasions, encouraging students to march to their own drummer and think out of the box and love life. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. The acronym STEM, STEM, stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. Robotics is that branch of technology that deals with design, construction, operation, structural disposition, and manufacture of robotics. Robotics involves automated machines that can take the place of humans in various situations. Mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, and computer science address the design, construction, operation, and application of robotics. Computer systems are used in control, sensory feedback, and information processing. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me at the roundtable, I welcome Melanie Bynum. Melanie is a ninth grade student at Sale High School. She's into dancing and acting, designing and building.
Hi, Liz. Thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. May Maddox. We've had her before, and we're always glad to have her come back. She is also a student at Sale High School. She's in the 11th grade. Her interests are ultimate frisbee, surfing, and programming.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Chris Whitmer. Chris is from Rickards. He is in the 11th grade. He is into electronics and digital design and all things robotics.
Yep, that's me.
Okay. Alexis Worrell, senior at Sale High School, film, robotics, what is this, leadership, video games.
Hi.
Okay. Hello. Dominic Sasson, Sale, 11th grade, engineering, building things.
Yeah, sadly, all too often it's breaking things.
Oh, well, that's all right. That's a part of building, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And teacher Jason Burdick, teacher at Sale Engineering Design.
Hi, thanks so much.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. I'm looking forward to the conversation. Looking forward to expanding my interest and my knowledge. And let's start with you all sharing exactly what is robotics. Whomever. May.
So I guess when I first heard, so what first got me interested was I went to Sale and I heard about this robotics program and I wasn't quite sure what it was. Mm-hmm. And so by going to the club, I learned that it, because my preconceptualized idea was me building things and things that'd be applied in, like, industries and factories. And the real case is it's not just that. There's so many aspects to robotics that includes business skills and, like, communication skills, as well as working well with the team. And then you get to the more, like, technical skills as well. But there's it's a lot more broad subject than what I first realized.
Okay. I'd like to hear from some.
More specifically, robotics is just anything that can take an input and act on it in some way.
Okay.
At least that's how Jason defines it.
Yeah, we argue about it all the time, even in class, of what it is. I guess there's not an official definition per se. Is a printer a robot? Is your phone a robot?
Mm-hmm.
So we make the distinction. It has to have a sensor on it, and it has to make a motion. It has to act on that.
Okay.
It has to be a physical, tangible motion. So your phone's vibration would not really count as being a robot, although there's a computer. It's taking in sense. It's got a camera on it. It's got buttons that you press. But whereas we would say like a printer does, because it takes and physically moves something out the paper, it takes through the trays,
okay.
It can measure how much paper's in there. So again, we argue all the time, and I don't know if there's a clear definition that we've decided upon.
So what we're talking about is automated sort of machines.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. That can take the place of humans, I guess.
Usually they're used in places that are unsafe for humans, or mm-hmm. they're repetitive, or, you don't need the human
like
to be there.
Like an assembly line, yeah. or when police or firemen use them, or going in for bomb.
Yeah.
Okay,
or
all right.
Screwing the cap on the toothpaste.
Okay, all right. Now, tell me a little bit about your team, how it evolved, what is it about? Okay, it's the Leon County Octorobotics. So does that mean that anybody in Leon County can become a member? You know, give us some details on this.
So we first started about 5 years ago. Jason got a grant from Motorola.
JCPenney.
JCPenney. Oh, yeah. My bad. Jason got a grant of $5,000 from JCPenney, and that's when they first started a team. Jason thought, hey, why not? Let's give this a try with his physics class. And that's when we started and enrolled in FIRST for the FRC team, which is for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. They have over 3,000 teams today, and they are unorganized. I can't remember what it's called.
Somebody help me.
Unorganized company?
Nonprofit
company.
Oh, okay.
My bad. So we started from there, and at the time we didn't have that much. We were all new to this, you know. We spent many nights at school till 10 a.m., you know, trying to figure out how to wire stuff and just put on a wheel and put this robot together. And we started partnering with FSU and a couple other people, and they help us out a lot, and we're very, very grateful for that. So after that, our first year, you know, first year wasn't that great, you know. So our first year, mm-hmm. we didn't know what we were doing. We went down competition, and the competition was great and all. There's so many friendly teams that are willing to help us. And after our first year, our second year, we kind of knew what we were doing. That's when we started writing more grants. And a big part of this team is writing grants so we can get this money to come in to build these robots.
So you all are involved in writing the grants?
Yes.
That's great.
There's a lot of grant writing process in this.
What obstacles have you encountered?
There's a lot of obstacles we have encountered. I mean,
everybody can answer.
Many,
it doesn't have
yeah.
to be
many,
person.
Many times we have, for our team, we have several projects that we work on. So oftentimes we'll have a lot of due dates of things, and we have mm-hmm. to really think about our priorities. And we'll be like, okay, we have a grant that's upcoming, but we also have to go and talk to maybe some representatives or the school board, or we need some publicity. And so a lot of times we get those sorts of like obstacles. It's like we lay ourselves with a lot of responsibility that sometimes it becomes a challenge organizing through those.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been getting better at it.
When you talk about these challenges that you have encountered, what would you identify as the biggest challenge and why?
What I would say personally, our biggest challenge is just getting people and mentors. Our biggest problem is our team. We aren't the biggest. We're mm-hmm. 30 students max, and maybe we have 5 or 6 mentors that come in. These other teams, when we go down to Orlando and compete, these teams are 100 students, you know, even more than that. And they'll bring their entire school, or they'll bring 100 kids down there, and it's just crazy. They have so much help and so many hands, and unlike us, there's 30 of us, and it's I mean, just like a few weeks ago about the grant writing, there was a grant due on Friday, and we never got it done, and we're all rushing. It was due at like 5 o'clock, and we're rushing. Jason was trying to get it done because I think we're all busy. We had an assembly at school, mm-hmm. and yeah.
Tell us about, let's explore a little bit more about the mentors, because there may be someone listening who may be interested in becoming a mentor. So can you elaborate on that?
So mentors are the people who watch over our shoulders and make sure we're not going to cut our fingers off, or make sure the robot's not going to fall in the pool of water, or whatever it may be. And also from basically the people who can give the students a little bit of guidance. Maybe when the student doesn't know how can I, hey, how should I attach the chain to this sprocket? The mentor can say, oh, you should do it this way. And then it gets
the students
going.
So do they need to be in STEM or engineering? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. That's what we want to hear.
Right. So like May was saying earlier, robotics is not just about, well, STEM is not just about science and technology and engineering and math. It's also about the communication side. Actually, when I was touring a college this summer, I found out one of the biggest majors, their secondary, the minor for an engineering student was business. And that's very interesting to me. And it made me realize how important the communication and management side of STEM is, because it's definitely a huge part. If you can't communicate with your coworkers or your boss, then you're not going to get anywhere. So we need mentors who can help us with the management and business side of this too.
We hear so much about the U.S. lagging in STEM. And what's your take on that? I mean, why do we find that students are not gravitating, maybe like they are in other countries, to the STEM areas? What's your feeling on it? Whomever.
I have an idea.
Okay.
So I hear that physics is sort of dropping out of high school education. Like the top, it's hard to find teachers, I guess, for the more difficult areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, some schools are cutting those kind of top end, more difficult subjects and pushing them lower. And so currently right now, biology is the only EOC, the end of course exam for sciences. And
oh, really?
So biology becomes a big focus. More teachers are put into it. There's a lot more training. There's a lot more money and funding going into biology. And so it's kind of, again, I would say, again, biology is a science, but again, it's not as technical.
Now there's this big push to STEM. It doesn't make sense. So why are you going to focus on biology and yet you're complaining about the American students being hot behind? And you know what?
Yeah.
Is it me just looking at it this way? Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I think there's also a big misconception. When a lot of kids come to my class as freshmen and they want to take robotics, I mean, they want to build a robot, and they think, hey, I'm just going to start cutting things and putting stuff together, and I'll glue it. But they have no idea this engineering design process of, hey, you spend a third of your time just thinking about what it needs to do. And then you spend the next third, you know, researching and figuring out and designing what you want it to do. And then the last third is actually when you actually build the thing and put it together and program it.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people want that instant gratification. You know, they want to, they're used to just going to the store and picking up the thing and, you know, USB plug and play.
Mm-hmm.
And with a robot, it's not that way. It's always breaking down. It's always, you know, something you didn't plan on. You get to the very end. It's like, oh, we didn't think of this, this, and this. And you got to struggle and be creative the entire time. And you're always solving problems.
Hold your thoughts. We're going to take a brief break and I'll get right back to you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I had to interrupt one of my panelists. Would you like to continue, Dominic?
Yeah, so the best part of robotics really is the last minute trying to get something to work that you hadn't planned on before. Even though if you did it right, you really wouldn't have to do that. The best part is thinking on your feet and coming up with a solution.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say robotics is, it's like a different type of, you develop a different type of thinking and a way you approach a problem. And
different in what way? I mean, just share that with us for the listening audience so we have an appreciation of what you're talking about.
After robotics, I found that I approach something, like I have a big problem, and I can break it apart and analyze each section individually, but also see how they are interconnected and relate to each other. And it helps with my overall understanding of the entire problem and how I should solve it. And then I can figure out ways of solving each individual section in a more creative, out-of-the-box way than what I would have first thought earlier.
Okay. All right. Other comments?
I have to interrupt there. Sometimes, May, I remember last year, she was programming a new sensor that she'd never used before. And so I just told her, you know, go program it, you know, figure it out. You know how to write code, you know, just program the sensor. And she was not happy with that. So for like the next 3 hours, it was question after question after question. Well, if that's how that works, well, how is that going to work next? She didn't need to know all of that to program it, is what I felt. And I was kind of like, just go program it. But again, she was not happy with that answer. She wanted more. To understand each individual piece and then start putting all those pieces together, layering up upon layer upon layer until you understand the whole process. And then for her, she felt like she couldn't program it at all. She's like, I cannot do this until I understand how each individual part's going to work. So it's definitely an interesting skill set to have or talk about.
I was going to say, relating back to Jason a little bit earlier, how kids join the club or the class thinking, oh, this will be easy and build a robot. And he teaches a lot of freshmen that come in, think this will be a great thing to do. And I had Jason when I was a freshman, and I first started a club when I was a freshman. And I thought it'd be a great thing, something new to do and learn. When I go to college, I have no desire to go into the technical field or the robotics field. But I find this as a fun side kind of hobby to do, to learn something new. So it's a lot of fun, but you're learning many new things. It isn't just, oh, go over here and put something together. There's a lot of measurements, cutting, recutting. Just last week for Halloween, I was trying to cut a piece of wood for my Halloween costume. And it just took me, like, I don't know, 3 days, and I needed help. And Jason was like, no, I'm not going to help you. You need to figure this out on your own. So, I mean, there's a lot of hands-on and doing it yourself, and you're learning so much. But it does take time and commitment to do this. Not commitment so much, but it does take time and patience to learn how to do this.
I know that both Dominic and I put in over 100 hours last year, I think over 120 hours, within the time frame of 6 weeks, just for this club. So it's a lot of time.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like it. Do you have comments?
I started robotics this year as a freshman, and it's a lot different than what I thought it would be. Last year I was doing Lego robotics through Cobb Middle School and our robotics team there. And it's a lot different in this, how we're doing it with our Octopirates team. It's a lot more complicated than I thought it would be, but it's a lot more hands-on. You can do a lot more than you can with just the Legos, because with this, you can either be, like, a programmer, a builder, someone who creates designs for the robot. You can even be a secretary and run things and make sure everyone and everything is organized for the meetings. You can do a lot more with this, and I have a lot of fun here.
Now, Melanie, you mentioned that you were in Lego robotics at Cobb. Are there other schools that also have robotics? Can you share with us what schools they are, and do they feed into your team program?
So Cobb Middle School started 3 years ago with a robotics program. And we started helping just mentor there, go over every other week and something, help them out, just answer questions. And then 2 years ago, Rickards started their robotics program. Also, Godby also started their robotics program about 2 years ago, and they're doing the Mindstorms. And Chris over at Rickards is starting getting a first robotic system up. So it's definitely growing in Tallahassee, and we're just trying to reach out to everyone, all the schools, and try to get them program started. So we started an underwater competition in Tallahassee here, doing underwater robots, and so we have 5 high schools now that have competed, and now this year 3 middle schools that are getting involved. So it's definitely growing as we reach out to other people. Also, the FSU has a robotics group called the Stride Lab and Mechatronics Lab. And they've been helping us and bringing mentors over and kind of teaching us the more advanced stuff. And so there's a sequence of people helping each other and getting together and working together on projects. So it's getting better.
Since the team has been at Sale, how has it impacted the school? I mean, have you seen arms reaching out to be involved, or have you found yourself being, engineers, you know, for the school? I mean, just how has it impacted the school?
Well, I was going to go on the side of how other schools view our school.
Okay.
Because currently we have some students from Leon, and a lot of time our school has a really bad connotation that comes with it. And so I was always talking to my friends, and they were like, they were always interested in programming and robotics, and they thought it was the coolest thing. But then I'm like, you should join us. And they're like, but it's Sail. So yeah. it comes with a plus and a minus, because at Sail, we are really centrally located. We're next to the mag lab, so we can get a lot of help and easy access that's faster than if we were further away. And when the Making Awesome was here, we went to them periodically as well. So centrally located, it's really nice. But then other schools with Sail, like with the Sail label on it, not as many schools like to come, which is partly the reason why we are trying to expand, mm-hmm. because it isn't just Sail. It's like the U.S. We're a blend of many people from many different backgrounds that can do different aspects within robotics.
Yeah, well, we know about, misconceptions, and I'm sure you would know well, Chris, you're at Rickerton. Rickerton has that same kind of, connotation. You say Rickerton, my God, how do you make it there? So hopefully you will be able to overcome that. Although there are a lot of different types of robots, can you talk about a little bit about their construction, what it involves?
Sure. So for our main competition, as May mentioned earlier, we have three competitions. Uh-huh. There's underwater robotics, which is called ROV, which stands for Remotely Operated Vehicle. Then there's our Invent Teams, Lemelson MIT Invent Teams project, which is that was a grant that we just finished writing. About eight students from the club wrote a grant for $10,000 from MIT and the Lemelson Foundation, and we got that grant. So now that's our project. And the third project is the FIRST Robotics FRC, FIRST Robotics Competition. So for the Lemelson robot, Invent Team, for the Invent Team robot, our task is to. Our basic task was to find a problem in the community, in the local community, and come up with a solution to it. So we met with a local organic farmer, Jeff Phipps, and he told us that his biggest problem was having to allocate so much labor to weeding in the garden. Mm-hmm. So he said if he had a small modular robot that could go down rows of crops and remove a high percentage of weeds, more than 50%, that would save so much time and labor and money.
Oh, it certainly would. I have a little garden, and that's my biggest. Yep. I'm very eager to hear this.
Right. So, and then you can use those labor resources for other things, such as identifying diseases, and treating them and stuff like that. So that robot will be constructed of because it's going to be outside. The idea is to get it to run most of the day, at least 18 hours of the day. So it's going to have to be rugged and waterproof. So I think that we're going to use mostly aluminum and Lexan or plexiglass.
Now, how will it move? I mean, will it have batteries? What kind of batteries? We want to know all about it.
Yeah, so we're going to use batteries, poly lithium-ion batteries, and we're debating on whether to use treads or really big squashy wheels because
of the dirt. Yeah, I guess it would be.
We don't want to compress the dirt very much because they're very keen on keeping the dirt sound there.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working on, the first task for Invent Teams is coming up with
this is fascinating.
Coming up with a design for actually removing the weeds, because our client, quote unquote, Jeff Phipps, gave us a set of parameters that we had to fulfill, and so the main one is low ground pressure. so that we're not disturbing the soil, because there's some magic with that happens in organic gardening, that when you compress the soil, the plants don't grow as well. So that's a high priority. And the other one is removing the weeds very effectively, and not necessarily going super fast, but going for a longer duration at a slower pace, so mm-hmm. that you're still effectively removing the same weeds, but you can be a lot more careful. Also, a very low cost is the third parameter, so we're aiming for less than $5,000.
Now, how is this, and I don't know if I'm asking you correctly, how is this program? I mean, will the gardener himself, herself, direct the robot what to do, or does it have some kind of... go ahead.
The robot, or the other thing, there have been previous things that have been created for weeding in the past, but our goal was to make it completely autonomous. So It has to have some way to interact with its environment. And we've considered different types of sensors, but we are currently leaning towards using a Kinect. So having our robot, being able to see like a human's eyes can see, and being able to filter the image and just target the weed, mm-hmm. and hopefully, according to mechanical people, be able to shoot a laser at it. Now, for me as a programmer, that is like annoyingly mm-hmm. but
because I'm thinking in gardening, at a certain stage of the plant development, how do you determine how would the robot determine it's a vegetable instead of a weed?
So our robot as of now is being made for small scale farms,
okay.
that mm-hmm. so they would have a furrow, mm-hmm. and so there would be plants on either side, and the type of plant is arugula, lettuce,
any kind of green.
Yeah, kind of okay. like a green, and so our job was just to go through the center and just take out like what was in the center.
We determined that it would probably be easier to just say, so you have your plants, you have your rows of plants on either side, and just tell the robot anything that's not on those rows, take out.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow, that's great.
Also, May mentioned at the very end, again, we've made like 8 or 9 prototypes now, and we're testing them out and trying to find which one's the lightest, which one's most energy efficient, you know, which one's going to get the highest removal rates. She mentioned lasers, which is something we just came across last week. We read an article from a couple people in Belgium that are doing laser weeding. Mm-hmm. They've only done it indoors, like in a completely sealed greenhouse with a laser very stationary, but it works on very small plants. And they're using these CO2 lasers to basically heat up the plant hot enough where it boils the water inside. Mm-hmm. So currently if anybody out there in the radios, we're looking for a CO2 20-watt laser. we've made lots of phone calls this week just to try to borrow one to do some tests. But so we're basically looking to see, is it even feasible? Could we mount a laser on our robot? Because mechanically, that's much simpler. Mm-hmm. Again, it's much more difficult for the programmers to find and locate, find the plant, pinpoint the laser to that position. But the article that we read was 1 joule of energy per plant, which is way lower than we could do anything mechanically. So,
how much do you envision this costing?
So for this grant was $10,000. So $10,000 on this robot we can build. And a lot of us, we're all in our prototyping stages, and a lot of us have different envisions on this robot, like lasers. Chris was just making this weird face over here when May said lasers, like, what? Lasers? Because he hasn't heard since Chris goes to Rickards. Mm-hmm. And, like, today during lunchtime, me, Jason, and a couple other students and another teacher were talking about lasers. Is this something we want to do? And it's a lot, some students want to do it. But there's programming students, and the programmers, it's a lot more work for the programmers just to program for the lasers.
It's also potentially dangerous.
Yes. Yeah.
The fires, because especially in a garden.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So with this, it's a lot of prototyping right now and designing, mm-hmm. which is going to be the best for this garden and what route do we want to take. So after that, we just start planning the budget for it. the costs for the materials, the wheels, the electronics.
Okay.
With us being teens and kids, there's going to be a lot of breaking and redoing, learning. You got to keep retrying and relearning, like Dominic over here.
Part of the learning process.
Yeah, part of the learning process, definitely. So
really, the cost would be reduced significantly, because if someone were really having this made for their, I mean, because you all would be paid. I mean, if someone were had contracted with some company, that's what I'm trying to get.
So,
yeah, okay.
The goal of this for the end is we are going to go up to MIT in Boston to Eureka Fest and present our project. And the goal of this is to get a patent.
Now, what is Eureka Fest?
So MIT has like an invention festival every summer. Okay. So it's June 20th, I think, this summer.
Uh-huh.
And they bring, again, they've put out 15 awards all over the country for these kids, these project teams to invent. And they also have college-level projects and beyond that they give out money to, this foundation gives out money to, just to help people invent new projects that are going on. So I got to go last year as a training to go see some of the projects, and some of them were incredible. I think the one that impressed me most was somebody who was working on something you could print out of your inkjet printer, a diabetes test. So you didn't have to buy these really high-end diabetic supplies. So these people in other countries could just replace the printer cartridge in their normal printer, print out their own diabetic samples, and be able to scan. And the machine costs like $5 to be able to read your diabetic levels. And so the access to that kind of information produced by a high school team was, you know, again,
yeah.
High school kids are very inventive, creative.
I would think
a lot of ways to do things. Even if they're not possible or plausible, you know, they're willing to progress and see if that idea is feasible.
The fact that at $5...
Yeah,
you know, you might have some problems with some of the larger corporations. $5, you know, because it's all about money.
Right.
So if you come up with a way to do something that's a lot cheaper, they could always buy it and then put a big price tag on
it.
Right,
that's why I wouldn't sell the patent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but the whole goal of this is to build this robot and hopefully get a patent. And then people out there would love the idea. And guess who has the patent? We do.
Yeah,
you
do.
But, you know, I mean, it's a great learning experience. This is something so totally new for us.
Hold your thoughts for 1 minute. We're going to take a brief break. Today's ethicist question, is it ethical to pursue the same project that a friend of yours who was very excited about that project and considering investigating it, is it ethical for you to take that idea and run with it? And I want to hear from everyone. You know, there's no right or wrong, but we just want to, we're going to go around the table. You know, you've got a friend, and they're going to pursue some project. And you know they're really super excited about it. Is it ethical for you to go on and pursue it?
I believe so. And just because that your friend is doing it, it doesn't mean that you can't, do it separately or even work together with them and do it together as best friends. And you... putting two heads together, you'll get a lot more ideas. So it'll help both of you.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was basically what I was going to say. I was going to say that by combining two minds, you'd get different perspectives. And you could, or if you didn't want to work together, you could approach it from different angles because everyone, yeah.
No, go right ahead. I'm writing notes as you say so because I want to ask you something.
I know. I find everyone takes something away from a situation differently than everyone else, and so when you're both analyzing it, you'll both get something out that's different, and it'd be cool to both do it and then compare notes and be like, "Oh, I didn't think of that."
Okay.
I think that it depends how far you take it, because if you take it so far as to say, hey, I did this so much better than you and whatnot, and then I think that's the point at which it becomes unethical. But if it's a friendly competition,
okay.
or whatnot, as long as... Yeah.
You added something in there that I thought was really important, and that's what I was writing when May was responding, about competition. What if it is in a competitive arena? Does that change it at all? I mean, does just that little bit change how you would respond to it? And think about it. I'll come back to you, Alexa.
Well, I mean, you have to. There's certain ways you can look at this, and I understand all of us look at this different.
Right.
And I want to be that person that looks at it so totally different. If they're doing it, to me, it depends on their motivation. I understand you're excited, but if you only get like you started for a month now, but you've gotten nowhere, but you tell your motivation is nothing, I'm gonna come in and take over that. I really enjoy it. And if you're mad, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, so be it, kind of. But I'm willing to work with you. But I'm not going. But if you're working with me, your name's going to be on this project. You must put in your commitment and time, because you know the thing I dislike the most is doing a project and then someone comes in and puts your name on it. I'm sure that's everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, your hard work and someone gets the fame and the glory.
Well, that's been one of the questions in the past. How do you, if you're doing a group project, how do you handle that person who's slacking? Yet everybody's name goes on it. So, of course, you're going to be motivated to do real well because you're going to get great. But here you have, you know, John who didn't do anything. And he gets the same grade. But before we address that, I want to hear your opinion on it.
I think that it's fine as long as you don't take credit for it again. And also, if it's something that you're doing and the goal is to actually complete it, if it's like if the goal is getting it done, then it's fine. But if the goal is like learning about it and them trying to figure it out,
and you get some type of recognition from it. Back to you, Alexis, because I know we were talking about, you know, that teamwork. How do you feel about that?
So if it's a group project and, you know, one person's just slacking and everyone else wants this A and their part's done, I feel like I think it's reasonable to go up and talk to a teacher. But don't do it in front of the class full of students, because they're going to know who you're pinpointing out and they're going to be upset about it.
Oh, really?
And then drama would happen. Go during lunchtime or pull the teacher aside private outside and tell them, you know, hey, this is, you know, we've been working hard on this. Mm-hmm. You know, prove your work to make sure it isn't someone else's too, but make sure you have it.
Well, I appreciate your opinions. We are out of time, and we'll have to do this next time. What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen. Tap into the pulse of Octopirates Teen. Did I get that right this time? Good. This hour, I have members of the team, and we are talking about robotics. I have a question to ask you before we get back into it. What does it mean when they say it's a hybrid? I mean, I just didn't understand. Like when they were talking about robotics and they say this is a hybrid, I mean...
Like cars? Hybrid? I think the idea is that it has a regular engine that drives it most of the time, but it also has a battery and electric motors. So when you brake, it's not just a couple of brake pads braking you. Mm-hmm. It's the motor, which is actually using the energy from you stopping to charge the battery, which it can then use to start you up again.
Okay. All right. You hear that a lot. And I just wanted to ask you exactly what that was.
Mm-hmm.
As we talk about robotics, can you share with us how robotics manipulate objects? I don't know if I asked you that correctly. Did I?
Well, the really hard part is seeing what the object is and grabbing it. We are not on the level where we could really pick stuff up like... Mm-hmm. A water bottle and pick it up. But there are people who can do it. You have to see what it is. You have to figure out where to grab it. And you have to have a mechanism that can grab it, which can be as simple, actually, as a balloon or a bag filled with coffee grounds. If you take a balloon filled with coffee grounds and you mold it over an object and you suck out all the air, it forms... It becomes hard, and you can pick stuff up with that. It's really cool.
Okay. Let me just ask one more, and you could answer. But then with that, when you have prosthesis, I mean, I'm thinking of like an arm where the individual can feel with the fingertips. Mm-hmm. How does that work? Okay, back to you, May.
I'm not 100% sure about the feeling, but right. I do know that there have been recent experiments where they attach sensors to your brain so they can measure, like, the firing of your neurons.
Mm-hmm.
And from
mm-hmm.
there, they can have you be able to control without moving your body. You can control an arm, like okay. if you were thinking about how you would move your own arm and how they can make a robot mimic what a human arm would do just by having someone think about it.
Okay. And I'll tell you why I asked. I was at a conference not long ago on disabilities, and one of the students there was disabled in multiple ways, okay? But it was fascinating. He could communicate, yet he couldn't move not any part of his body except his eyes. And he could communicate with you through computer using his eyes. So that's why I'm asking you all these questions, because I thought, let me ask them. They can tell me all the answers.
So our experience for the last 5 years has really been in robot games.
Mm-hmm.
First robotics, they call the varsity sport of the mind. It's basically about, you know, 3-on-3 competition, sort of like basketball or hockey or soccer, where you're manipulating some object. You got to pick up a ball and shoot a ball in a hoop or throw a frisbee or, you know, pick up a tube. So again, we have not focused at all on our team
mm-hmm.
on any sort of like complicated arms. I know at the Stride Lab, dealing with what you're like, how do you feel something? They have some force sensors that are like, how to describe. So if you had the bottom of a Coke can,
okay.
on the bottom of that Coke can, there would be thousands of little tiny force sensors. And those little force sensors can feel microscopic little differences of the surface of the material. So the one at the Stride Lab is a hopping robot. And as it hopped around in a circle, it could tell if it was on 80 grit sandpaper or 120 grit sandpaper or 200 grit sandpaper
mm-hmm.
just by the texture of those different force, were there big force and how often they were. So some sort of proprioception feeling can be done that way. Or there's all sorts of vision tasks that can model 3D shapes now with lasers, whereas just by seeing it, you can tell the whole shape of it. So you need a lot less feeling ability or feedback in that way.
Got another question. And you all started to talk about it. I think you did, Chris. My question is you have to excuse my ignorance now, how you move in different areas. I mean, you were talking about underwater.
Mm-hmm. Locomotion or whatever movement
mm-hmm.
is one of the, I would say, fundamental challenges of robotics. So how do you actually get your robot, around and so that it can interact with more of the environment? So the underwater robotics, which we have at Rickards and at Sail, and a bunch of other schools, is the robots use propellers and motors to move around. So it's like an airplane, but underwater.
Okay.
Basically.
Now, how would that compare? Because, I mean, robots do everything. They can climb up the walls.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk. So how would that compare as far as that locomotion to other types of, I mean, in the water, okay, I follow you, but how would that compare? Is it the same basic principle?
Not really at all.
Okay.
Everything changes depending on what you're doing. Our robots have all had wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And we have progressed from just plain old, like the wheel you'd have on a car only scaled down, to special wheels that allow you to actually go sideways. You can go sideways perpendicular to the way that the wheels are pointing, which is really, really cool. But there are a lot of teams that use tank treads for this particular thing, and tank treads are better for a variety of things. But if you're climbing up a wall, I know you can't use wheels on a wall. You can't get any traction. I've seen robots at the Stride Lab that are basically just two hooks, and one hook goes forward and grabs, and the other hook goes forward, and it's just this tiny little thing. Like, okay. You could throw it so far. It's incredible, but it all depends.
Okay.
Oftentimes, we scientists are now looking a lot towards nature, and because nature does things in amazing ways already, and so we're learning how to imitate it. Mm-hmm. For example, I was watching a show about some new technology about climbing walls, and it was based on a lizard and how they can climb walls and how the pads of their feet, how the bristles and how the shape of the bristle at certain points in their motion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in their ascent. And so they studied those, and then they imitated it with a robot, and then it could climb the same way. And so animatronics.
Well, as you talk about looking at what's happening in normal life, in human life, how do they communicate with humans? I mean, because so much of our communication is not always what we say. Okay, that's what I'm mm-hmm. trying. It's not always what we say, but it may be gestures. It may be affect. So how does a robot know how to communicate and to respond? Is that a decent question?
That's the really hard part.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. For us, we just do really basic stuff with Game Boy controllers, mm-hmm. I think. Not
Xbox
controllers, right. Sorry, I don't do that part. Trying to communicate is the hardest part. Even just the simplest thing that you said, just reading your voice, is still really hard for robots and computers to do. They can mm-hmm. do it, but it's tricky. I know that they make robots that can try to read expressions and stuff, but they mm-hmm. they aren't nearly what a human is yet.
Yet, you say.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, someday robots will be just as good as humans, and that's a day that I dread.
Yes, definitely.
One of the interesting things, this is a whole other field, but definitely the whole study of nature. So one of the really intriguing things to me is how our brain, humans' brains, and animals' brains have relatively little computing power when compared to a modern computer. I don't know how many transistors it's equivalent to, but it's like less than one-tenth of what a modern computer has. And yet, our brain is still so much faster than what we can artificially manufacture. So that's something that really, really intrigues me. I mean, mm-hmm. I hope to study that more.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Where do we go from here? We've got 2 minutes. Can you tell me what's on the horizon? I know you have competition coming up. With December 6th is the underwater. And then in January, you have competition coming up, right?
In January, we have our FRC first kickoff. The video is released, and mm-hmm. it tells us what we're going to be doing for the next 6 weeks and what we're going to create the robot to do and program it to do. And we have our competition for that in May?
March.
We have in about March. And that's when our large project starts all the way in January.
So on top of that, what Melanie just said, our big focus right now is the weeding robot. How are we going to do this, and where do we start? Basically, we're at our prototypes. But what our club is most, not club, but organization, our community of robotics, we're most looking for is students. And there's a lot of students I've met out there, and they think, oh, no, I'm not smart, or I can't do this. I can't join your club.
It's not true.
You don't need any kind of background at all. We teach you from the beginning. We'll teach you what you need to learn. Like, we're here for you to help you. My freshman year, I started. I was like, I can't do this. I don't know anything. But, you know, as I kept going and I learned so much, and now I can do this stuff on my own. So as students, we're just looking for more students to join us. It doesn't matter if you don't have a background, and mentors. We're looking for mentors.
What if they're at a school that doesn't have a robotics program?
So this is an interesting...
Make it quick. We only have a few seconds.
All right. So I've had the... being at Rickards, we didn't have a robotics program when I came. Mm-hmm. But I was able to find the SAIL program, which has now become a community program.
Okay.
And there's also so much stuff on the internet that you can practically, I mean, you can start your own club. If you have the motivation to do it, you can do it.
Thank you. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. I want to extend a sincere thanks to all of you for coming. You have to come back in the spring and do an update. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.